Welcome back to another episode of the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
Today, we are pumped to bring you an interview with a player who has recently burst onto the scene for the U.S. men's national team, Nicolas Gioacchini.
This is crazy. This is absolutely insane. Such at a loss for words. I mean, I'll find them. Don't worry.
Do I like playing against adversity? Man, I just like playing, period.
I'm shocked, and I'm so proud of our guys, man. Unbelievable.
Putting the crest on every single time means something to me.
This is Weston McKinney, and you're listening to the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
On this podcast, we are blessed to speak to legends of the U.S. men's and women's national teams, but also we get to know players that are just making their first steps at the national team level.
Before last November, Nicolas Nico Gioacchini never received a call-up at any age level. He made his debut in the U.S. Men's National Team 0-0 draw against Wales, and days later, he made his first start and scored two goals, which means a brace, in the U.S. Men's National Team's 6-2 win against Panama. I mean, I watched him. I was like, yes, another striker,
right.
a number nine. Let's go. I'm hyped up.
Charlie, you know what my first thought was?
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this.
We got to get him on the podcast.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Well, here he is. Welcome, Nicolas. How are you?
Thank you, guys. Thank you. I'm doing well. You know, I just work hard, and you know, I'm blessed to be where I am. So I'm always happy. I'm always smiling.
Well, you're making your debut on the U.S. Soccer Pod, so congratulations. What have you been doing to stay positive and focused during the pandemic?
Well, you know, I'm lucky to have my family here, first of all. That's extremely important, always has been, and I think always will be. My mom, my twin brother, my older sister, I've kind of moved all over, always following me. And during this pandemic, they've been there supporting me, you know, pushing me when I've maybe even felt lazy and felt tired, and you know, the lack of motivation, when the lack of motivation was there, they were always present to, you know, give that extra oomph and motivation to go forward and to just keep training hard and practicing hard and keeping that head clear for once, you know, this health situation gets better.
I like that you said that even you as a elite professional athlete felt a little lack of motivation in the last year, because I think everybody can relate to that, just trying to grind through what happened. So we're happy to have you on the show. You made your U.S. men's national team debut recently. Now you're making your podcast debut. I mean, big things really happening. I'm sure those are held on equal levels for you, right?
Yeah, it's special. That's for sure. It's special.
Well, we really want to get to know you. I think that is what we're most curious about when Charlie and I were talking. So I think what is interesting in doing some of the research about you, Nico, is that you grew up in a very unique way. Can you tell us about just your upbringing and how you had the opportunity to live in various places around the world?
Well, yeah, I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, and I spent my first 8 years there of my life. You know, as a normal kid, at a normal young kid. And then, you know, at the age of 5, I told my mom that I wanted to play soccer. You know, at the time, soccer wasn't, in the U.S., wasn't the huge thing it is now. You know, there you saw more baseball, basketball, and football being played more so than soccer. So she didn't believe me at first. So, you know, another year went by and I said, you know, mom, can I play? And, you know, at that point she said, you know, kick the ball. Let's see what you got. I did. And then said, okay, let's play soccer. And so at the age of 6, my mind was set to really just soccer. And, you know, after that, at the age of 8, I played a couple years in the U.S., in Kansas for my, you know, my school and, you know, a little club in the area, called the Orange Stars. I'll never forget that, because it was so much fun to find a group of guys who played, you know. Then I moved to Italy when I was 8, to Parma, Italy, because my dad had to continue his job there. My dad sells pasta machines. So, so you know, into Italy was kind of the place to go.
Seems like the right place to go.
All right. So, you know, we moved there, all of us, and spent almost four years. You know, I played for some small clubs in the region, but nothing professional as yet. And at the age of 12, we decided to head back to the United States because, you know, we missed home. So we headed back to the U.S. We didn't move back to Kansas. We moved to Maryland, the Maryland area, which was, we first moved to Chevy Chase. And then during the 4 years I lived there, 3.5 years I lived there, we moved to different areas around around Maryland. But that's when I got my first taste of a MLS youth team, because I joined DC United. And, you know, I was really excited to join DC United once they accepted me, but it wasn't what I was looking for. I didn't feel like it fit me as a person and as a player. So I only spent a few months there and then moved on to local teams. You know, I played for Olney. I played for ESA, I played for Cerritos, I played for a bunch of, you know, local teams. And I found that, you know, it fit more of what I liked. Mm-hmm. These were Hispanic teams, Cerritos, ESA. And, you know, I felt like I belonged more in that type of, it was just different. Besides that, when I was 15, that's when we moved to France. We moved to Paris. My dad continued his job here in Paris. And then, you know, I joined a quick team called Red Star, who were in the third division at the time. Actually, second or third division at the time. I don't remember. I think it was second. And that was my first experience of being in a, you know, European upper level club for what I knew. You know, it wasn't one team, you know, not something everyone knew, but it was still a step forward from where I was the previous year. So I spent about 4 months there. Something went wrong. They couldn't get my playing card, my license. Something went wrong. So I at the end of the day, 3 months later, I was with no team for maybe a week or so. And then I tried out for Paris FC. I managed to find a tryout for Paris FC, who were in the third division, moving up to the second division. And that was 2015. Yeah. And by then, you know, it was another taste of another place. We're in the upper part of, you know, football. So, you know, I liked it. I liked it a lot. I spent a whole year there without playing because it took them about 9 months to a year to get my playing card, my license. And then the following year, I was in the under 19 group. So I played the whole year with Paris FC, and that came to the summer of 2018, which is when I signed my a contract with Caen, which where I am now. They were in the first division at the time, and so, you know, it was a huge step up for me. And, you know, I just took it step by step. At the end of the day, that's the only thing you can do is take it small steps. So I went there. Great first season with the U19s, the reserves. I was hoping to get to play in the first division, maybe one game in League One, but it didn't happen. But, you know, everything happens for a reason. So maybe that's for another day. Then they moved on to the second division. But that's when I got my playing time. Changed coach, everything changed, management, president, all that stuff. And luckily, the coach came to see me in one of my reserve games. And I was on the bench. I came in, he liked me. I got my first training with the professionals the following week. And then the next game I was on the bench. So I just had a flash of the Orange Stars when I was 5 or 6. And then being able to finally sit on a professional bench, you know.
So cool.
Yeah, 15 years, almost 15 years later. It was just an explosion in my life, which I don't know if I would handle the emotions at the time. Yeah. I don't remember. I'll have to ask my mom.
Well, it's good because I want to take this back to when you were 5.
Yeah, me too.
And like you said, you kind of chose a sport that wasn't that popular in Kansas City, Missouri. I was kind of the same way. I'm in Manchester, New Hampshire. No one played soccer. You know, it was a very small sport. So what kind of called to you? What was that moment that you said, there's not too many kids who play the sport, but this is what I want to do. Why did you decide that soccer was the sport for you?
Nothing else gave me so much joy to nothing. It was just too much joy and too much fun just to play with a ball. I had never seen soccer before. I just picked up a ball and started playing. That's what my mom told me. And I don't know, it just, the adrenaline, just kicking a ball into a goal gave me, nothing could compare to that. Nothing. So I was like, okay, I know that.
Did you go to Kansas City Wizards games, or did you get a chance to?
I went to one game. I do not remember which game it was, though. I could not tell you. But we went to one game altogether. But I didn't feel like I needed something more exciting. You know, the game was, I thought it was good. But I needed more. And that's when I fell in love with AC Milan and the Serie A, because I saw these guys and I'm like, nah, I need to go there. You know, the whole environment was just different, you know? So, you know, at the end of the day, I was like, Mom, soccer. Like, you can't change my mind. It's going to be soccer.
Well, you mentioned AC Milan and the Italian teams. Is that a little bit of your dad's doing? Your dad's Italian, correct? And your mom's Jamaican. Yes. So yes. Both countries love their football, but you're drawn a little bit more to that Italian side.
You know, I actually fell in love with AC Milan because of their colors. I love red and black. I love red and black.
Honesty, so, I like it.
Yeah, it's going to be AC Milan. And then it happened to be a club that my dad loved. You know, it was his home club. So that was a coincidence, I guess. And that's when, you know, we kind of bonded more into the football domain because of that. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, no, you know, it wasn't my dad who told me or got me into football. It was just seeing it, you know, seeing.
So when you moved to Italy at the age of 8, you go to Parma, are you thinking, I'm finally on Italian soil, like I can see these players and teams up close and personal? Or was it still kind of a dream? Or did you get a chance to meet some of the kids that are playing in the streets and kind of learn the game a little bit more? And then did you get to go to any Serie A games?
It was still kind of, I didn't go to Italy thinking that, you know, I'm finally in Europe and I may get a chance too. I came to Italy because of my dad's job. So everything was kind of normal to me. I thought I'd been like the US, you know, playing with these local kids. It's cool, you know, there's nothing different. But to my surprise, little to my surprise, it just pulls you in. Just football, I guess, in Italy just pulled me in, you know. I saw a couple games when I was there, Parma playing in their stadium. I saw Parma Juventus. And another game. I just remember the Juventus game, and it was different. It was even better than what I saw in the U.S. You know, at the moment, I was shocked, but still in the back of my head, I was like, you know, it's still a dream. It's still a dream. I'm not here thinking I got to become a professional baller. I was thinking, this is beautiful, and this is what I want to do. You know, But I wasn't thinking about the professionalism, that stuff as yet.
But you sensed that that was something that you wanted to pursue, being in that environment, sitting in the stands. You were like, I want to be on the pitch one day.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, there's other pretty big legends. I think of Kobe Bryant and him living in Italy and how that really affected who he was as a human. Do you feel like living in Italy and being immersed in the culture has helped you develop as a person as well off the field? And when you went there, were you in a school, like, were you trying to learn Italian right away? Did you know Italian, or how did that transition go as well?
Well, when I moved there, I didn't, you know, I learned the basics, you know, hi, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. But I didn't speak it. I could understand it a little because, you know, my dad and my dad's parents, my grandparents spoke. So, you know, you got the ear a little bit, but I was on a scale to 1, 0 to 10. I was probably like 2, you know, 2 or 3. So, you know, I went to a full Italian school, to, you know, pick it up, learn. It was difficult. At first, it was extremely difficult. But, you know, when you hear a language all day, all the time, and you want to understand what people are saying, you find a way to learn it as quickly as you can. It's just like, I learned languages pretty quickly, I think. You know, I learned Italian in 3 years, French in 3 years. You know, English is my maiden language, so it doesn't count. But, you know, it was hard at first. It was hard to learn. But at the end of the day, it helped. I could just say that. Yep.
Oh, I was going to say, to follow up with that, making that hard, was it easy because you were playing football and you could use the game as a way to connect with people on a different level or have that release of, right, I don't have to talk a lot during a match, I can just play?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. You know, you start up in not needing to speak the language. Because, you know, football, you don't have to speak the language with guys, you know, at a certain level you may, but at the time, you know, with these kids, you didn't really have to speak it. It wasn't really organized ball, but after a while, there were terms that you needed to learn. So when I didn't know them, it was painful to me. I was like, you know, I gotta learn this, you know, I can't just go on assuming what these guys were saying. I gotta know, I gotta learn. And I'll just feel better about myself knowing that people are saying something I can understand and I can respond and I can converse. So, you know, that's, I can't complain. It was hard at first, but it's, you know, it was for a good reason.
Throughout your childhood, did you have any role models or people that you looked up to that kind of pushed you to be better? Because I look at mine and, you know, whether it's a Mia Hamm, whether it's a Michael Jordan, whether it's Ronaldo and Thierry Henry, which were, you know, my idols, they were like the gods for me. I always watched them and I said, I got to be them. I need to be at this level. They pushed me. Did you have anyone in particular that was pushing you that you aspired to be like?
Not at the time. I got into finding a player or like loving a player to the point of being inspired by him. Maybe when I was mostly my first year in France, probably. I couldn't say that before. I was like, you know, let's say Ronaldo, Messi, you know, that's my goal. I saw AC Milan play, you know, I liked Inzaghi, you know, Ambrosini, you know, there were players that I liked, but it wasn't an inspiration. It was, you know, I like what they're doing, but I didn't find a player that I loved. It was inspiring, but I didn't find a player I loved. Maybe that's better. You know, when I came to France, it was Zlatan. Zlatan was, all right, this guy is too cool. You know, this guy, I just love the way he carried himself. Some people find it arrogant. Some people find it confidence. I read his book, I Am Zlatan, which is a super book. And after that, I had a total different respect for him. And I think that's a reason why I found him being my idol at the end of the day, is because I saw the struggle he went through. And, you know, when there's some parts you can pull out and relate to it, so you're like, oh shoot, you know, maybe I can become Zlatan one day. But you know, yeah, it came later on, the inspiration and the idols.
Yeah. Well, between that time that you're talking about in France and Italy, you came back to the United States. Did you miss the US when you were in Italy? And what was it like to be back in kind of a formative time of your life, those early teenage years, to be back in the United States? Did you play other sports when you were there? Or what was that time like for you?
Yeah, I missed the US a lot. You know, the first year was fine in Italy. First year was fine. But after that first year, I started missing it. You know, the second year I was like, yeah, I'm missing the US. The third year was like, mom, I want to go back. I need home. It's just the US environment was just different. You know, it was more home. You know, we had an apartment in Italy and a house in the US. The house in the US was home. You felt like home because a house isn't a home. You got to find a home. And Italy was not my home. It didn't feel like home. And that's why I think still until today, I had that connection more to the US than to Italy because it felt more like home. So yeah, I after 2.5 years, 3 years, I was like, Mom, we got to go home. I'm missing it. Yeah, for sure.
You initiated it? Mom, we got to go.
I think she had asked us, all three of us, my siblings. And because she had seen that, you know, something, we were kind of down. We were kind of down for about 6 months. I remember we were down. We weren't, something was missing. She asked us, guys, what's up? And we were like, yeah, Mom, we want to go home. So she, after that day, I think at the end of the school year, or was it the end of the school year? I don't think it was the end of the school year. I think it was the end of the first semester. We head home. And then we restarted school in the U.S., you know, starting January or so. But yeah, we had missed home. I had missed home way too much. Yeah.
So let's get into France. Bienvenue. Comment ça va, mon ami? This is what I like to hear. This is a conversation I like to hear right here. So you moved to France and you signed with Paris FC. Okay. You're a professional. It's not Champions League, but it's professional football, right?
Paris FC. I don't have a professional contract, but I was under the professional environment and professional structure to get you to become a professional.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what was that moment like for you to be in that? And what was that process like? Were there ups and downs? What was the most trying period during that transition? And where did you have the most success during that time?
Yeah, it was a difficult transition period for sure, especially with school as well, because I was in a private English international school, mm-hmm. and it was very demanding. So it wasn't working with my football. So added on to that, getting accustomed to this new French environment in a big city was difficult at first. You know, I can't complain. It could have been worse because there's always worse. But for my standards, to what I was accustomed to, it was difficult. The playing wasn't hard. I found that I was up to level. You know, I was under 17 when I got there, and I was playing with the under 19. So in terms of football and brains and technique and all that, I was ready to play at that level. But just getting accustomed to the environment, the trainings, the boys, the competition, you know, there's always... You always have competition, and I wasn't accustomed. In America, in the U.S., I was always, let's say, I always had my spot in the first 11. Coming here, at first, it wasn't like that. I had the level to be in it. I think I had the level to be in the first 11. But there were always guys in front of you, guys who were more experienced, guys the coach preferred. And so, you know, you had to, you know, build your way to the top and build your way to those starting 11 and then playing those games, which was the most difficult part. I don't think many kids liked me. First of all, I wasn't French. You know, their mentality was more so, you know, Americans don't really know how to play soccer, you know, play the ball. And you know, that inspired me. I feel like people's reactions and words inspire me when it's against me, you know, when it's negative. So I was like, you know, all right, cool. You know, we'll see what's gonna happen. You know, you just keep working hard and it'll pay off. And I guess it paid off at the end of the day. But yeah, it was a very difficult transition at first.
What did you notice the main differences between Italian football playing in the US and then playing in France? Because I would imagine they each have a little of their own style when you're in the mix.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to compare them because I was always with different age groups. But when I was in the US, I was more so with the, as I said, the Hispanic teams, which was much more physical. Much more physical than what I was accustomed to. So I was already physically prepared, let's say, for the Italian football when I got soccer when I got there. And then But on top of that, the Italians had that different mentality. So I pulled some of that, you know, I got accustomed to some of that mentality with the physique. And then when I got to France, I think, you know, I couldn't compare it to what if I went to Germany or England or Spain. So in my head, I was like, okay, it's hard, but it would have been probably much harder if I had come straight from the US and not had that transition in Italy. And also if I hadn't played with the Hispanic teams, which built my physique and my, you know, the rage I had to play, you know, if I didn't go through that, it might have been also more difficult. So at the end of the day, you know, I didn't really compare them. I just pulled as much as I could from each other and then combined it, hoping that it would help me adapt to wherever I go.
Well, you definitely adapted. It helped you. So you transfer to Caen and you're playing with the second team for Caen. Your first season, you score 7 goals in 22 matches. You move up to the first team the following season. Did you feel like everything finally clicked for you, that it all came together and you were now, you know, scoring goals, you're playing the way that you had hoped for?
Not at first. I always had that doubt in my head. I always had that negativity saying, you know, don't get too hyped up, you know. There's going to be another thing coming out that's going to try to, you know, another roadblock. I'm kind of like that. There's always something else, you know, there's always something else. So I was happy. I was like, oh shoot, you know, League Two, you know, let's go. Let's get this year going and get some games in and some goals. That was my goal, you know, but I was like, okay, are you ready for it? You've never played a professional game. The coach is calling you up. Are you ready for it? You know, everyone's saying, yeah, you're ready. If the coach brings you up, you're ready. Your team is saying you're ready, you know, but that doubt, like, yeah, you're ready. You may be ready, but now it's time to prove that, yes, you were right. I was ready. And that was always the hardest part. You know, that was always the part that made me nervous. You know, now it's time to prove that I can become a professional player. And first game I played was a starter against Paris FC, which was my old club.
Yeah,
in Paris. And I scored my first goal. You know, we won that game. And previous to that game, the club was struggling. They weren't winning any of their games. So I finally helped the team win, and I got a goal against my former team. Oh, so,
you know, that felt good. That felt good.
You know what else, too, I think about is you talked about being nervous in that moment. Those are the nerves, though, that you just crave. I don't know if you were like that, too, Charlie, but like,
yeah.
Those nerves when you're in a moment and you're like, man, this could be a big moment. Do you, Nico, or is that something that you still to this day feel and have learned to embrace? Because when you get those nerves, you feel like you're on the edge of something really cool.
Yes, I do. It's nerves that on the moment I feel kind of scared, but looking back at it, that feeling of being nervous is incredible. Even like my first game with the national team, just being called up, you know, I was that nervousness, the taxi to the airport, the flying over. And it was a crazy thing. I don't think I must have the smile the whole day. It's something that, and you know, that's the adrenaline, I guess, that I felt when I first kicked the ball, you know, like, whoa, like what's going on? Mm-hmm. I love it. I need more. And it's something you just crave and just crave and crave and crave and want more of. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That makes me miss playing, Charlie. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say during my playing career, like when I had those nerves, I could feel like, whoa, the pressure, and I could feel kind of like, whoa, this game means something. Like there's a lot on it. And I didn't love it at the time, but now that you talk about it now, and I look back, I'm like, oh, give me, please give me that feeling back. I loved it. But you're playing in League Deux, right? In France. and it's produced some of the world's biggest talents, even your club now, N'Golo Kanté, right? What he's done at Chelsea. Where have you developed the most since you've been playing, and what makes the league so challenging? Because people aren't scoring that many goals. It's a very difficult league, only 2.21 goals per game, to be exact. So what would you say?
Yeah, it's extremely physical. I think that's just number one. It's just defenders, and your opponent just has no mercy in a way, you know. They will, the way they want to stop you is, let's say, if you dribble someone and the ball goes through, you're not going through. If you try to dribble and they get the ball, that's it. So it's either you go or you don't, but you don't have the ball if you go through. So that's the physical part of the game where it makes it difficult, you know, contact. There's so much contact in the games. You know, you come out the games with, I have holes in my cleats. I have bloody ankles. You know, it's just, I mean, I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love getting hit. Unfortunately, you know, my mom doesn't like that, but I love getting hit. It gets me into the game. And you know, it's just that the league is just so physical. It's not very technical. It's not very tactical. It's just 100% for 90 plus minutes. And people just give their lives to just, you know, you're not going through it. So yeah, that's the part of the game which I'm learning. You know, I don't necessarily love that harshness. I like getting hit, but when it's harsh, it's different.
Right.
But I know that it'll help me later on. It'll build the mindset. It'll build the relentless, you know, attitude in going into a game, knowing that I get hit, doesn't matter. I know how to keep going once mm-hmm. I get hit. It will not shut me down. So that's the part that I feel like I am learning from this league.
It sounds like CONCACAF to me. That's what it sounds like. World Cup qualifying to me. When you're playing in some of these places and the grass is up to your knees and they're playing for their lives, everything, their family, they're kicking you. It's these challenges. They're trying to take a piece of your ankle. You better bounce back up. And if anything, if you're not already turned on, you're going 1,000% at them. Like if anything, you're more engaged. Like you want to show, not only are you not going to beat me, but I'm gonna put you into the ground. So you know, next time, don't even put on your boots. That's like the attitude, which I love that you're getting that taste of it.
That's it. That's it. And you know, I look forward to every game like that. Every game, even the warm up, I'm looking at defenders like, I hope you kick me just once. Just kick me once. You know that. All right, just do it once. Just
you,
do it once.
I know you won't kick me. I know you won't kick me. I pray that you kick me.
Yep. But, you know, it's that adrenaline. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So, Nico, you're 20 years old. You're in your second season in Ligue 2. Did I say that right? Deux?
Ligue 2.
Ligue 2. You guys, I'm not a French expert like you two. So I can sing head, shoulders, knees, and toes, which we've discussed in French. But that's for another podcast. But you're in your second year in this league. I think everybody's curious. What are your goals for club football? What do you want to accomplish when, you know, in years and years from now, when you're thinking about who you were in the club football world? What does that look like to you?
Winning trophies. I want to win trophies. I like silverware, so I want to win trophies too. You know, my dream was always the Champions League. My dream was not necessarily, my dream was to win it. But my first dream before that was just to be able to be in the stadium and listen to the anthem, you know. That was like the day that will happen. I will probably cry. I probably will. I hope, but I probably will.
And not was. Your dream wasn't just that. Your dream is that.
Is that, right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So that, yeah.
Of course. I just want to be the best player my, I guess, talent can help me become, you know, just the best player I can become and be able to win Champions League and World Cups and, you know, especially with my national team, because it's home, you know, it's home. So
let's get into that.
Yeah, love to get into that on this podcast, the first caps, the stories. But before we even do that, I want to know, are you like a student of the game? Is there a striker that you look at from the past and you say, man, he resembles kind of my athleticism, my build, the way I play, and I want to watch him to kind of study how he was so successful, how he scored goals? Is there a player that you kind of watch and you're like, yeah, I want to emulate his success?
Not really. I probably should. But not really. I look at several ones. I used to look at, I was suggested Robin Van Persie.
But you're right-footed, no?
I am right-footed, yes, but so, that's okay.
Come on, no. I would go with Trezeguet. Even though you're an AC Milan fan, I feel like your build and the way you play, it reminds me of a David Trezeguet from the Juve days.
Yes, my coach, the one who helped me prepare to come to Europe, told me that. He was like, yeah, you're like Trezeguet. So, yeah, he did tell me that. So,
Charlie's celebrating. Oh, take a lap, Charlie. Yeah. Congratulations. Oh, that's so funny. Okay, well, Charlie will be continuing to give you little nuggets of other inspiration as we go along. But one of the things we talked about, Nico, is you have an Italian father, a Jamaican mother. You were raised in the U.S. You could have represented either of those other countries. What went into the decision of representing the United States?
It's just home. I don't know. It's just...
You were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
That attachment.
Yeah, that attachment, to the red, white, and blue. And, especially with everything that's going on right now with, the racial problems and really all the problems we're facing as a country. I want to be part of helping that. I want to be part of, let's say, the big community that we are and the better community that we should become. I feel like I can play part in helping that. And I really do. So, all these things, when I think about it, it's just USA, USA, USA. I just want to be, I want to help home. I love home. I miss home. I haven't been to the US in years as well. So, I just know that I'm with a group of boys who are all trying to help this cause and win trophies and be happy and represent, the three colors as well as we can. It's just home, really.
When do you recall the U.S. men's national team staff first reaching out to you, and what were those conversations like?
It was March, I think, about a year ago, March, April. And, at first you're like, okay, shoot, they're looking at me. I was surprised. Of course, I was surprised. They're looking at me. But as I said, I always have that doubt. I'm like, they're looking at you, but look at your numbers. What are you doing? Where do you play? There was a bunch of things I was like, they probably won't call me up because, I'm comparing myself to also the players that they were supposed to, they were going to call up, the kids of my age, all the players who I eventually met. And, you see where they are, you see where you are, and you're like, I'm missing a lot. So they might not call me. But I couldn't worry about that. At first I was thinking about it, but I couldn't worry about that. I had to worry about do your best as you've been doing since day one. Do your best, work hard. And if it is to be, it is to be. I can't force something. And it was to be, I guess. So, looking back at it, you're like, you did the right thing to think the way you did. But there's still more. There's always more.
Oh, yeah. There's much more. Much more. Yeah.
I'm so interested in your mindset, because you've mentioned that a couple of times during this podcast, is this idea of doubt but also confidence in yourself. Do you feel like where do you get that level-headedness? Because it's almost as if you're trying, from my point of view, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you're trying to not get too far ahead of yourself or think too much of yourself always using maybe these doubts that you're calling in order to fuel you to continue to be better. Where do you think that comes from?
You know, you're right. I don't know where it comes from, to be honest. I've just always been that way. I could say that success frightened me and still kind of does frighten me. Because, you know, a dream come true, like how, you know, how? So I always put that doubt, you know, there's still this to do, still that to do. So I don't think about as you say, getting ahead of myself. I don't think about the too positive, the too much of I am here, I'm this, I'm that. Because at the end of the day, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm nobody. At the end of the day, that's what it is. If you compare yourself to where others are that you admire and that you look up to, you're nobody. But then you can look at where you are compared to others who are not where you are, and that helps humble me. So I guess that doubt just keeps me on track. It just keeps me on track, and I don't doubt the doubt. It's just the way I am, and I just follow it. And so far, it's been working pretty well.
Is your twin the same way? Yeah. Your twin brother?
I don't think so. No, he's not.
You know, I have twin boys, and they're completely different too, in every way. But I was just curious. Maybe your brother kind of made you feel that way, or you kind of pushed you to be that way.
He's the opposite. He shows confidence. He always knows what he's doing. He's like, this is what I'm doing. Done. Period. I always have that doubt that, you know, you're not there yet. You haven't done it yet. You know, I always had that, and I guess it's guided me. Also, I don't doubt the doubt, as I say.
Yeah. It's interesting to just to think about that and what you've said about other players that you've watched play and found inspiration from. When you're saying that, you're like, I don't want to compare myself to them either. You want to be you. And I think that probably, in a way, that doubt helps you just stay in your lane and know that you can get better and be inspired by them. But it's just a really interesting point of view. And I liked, like, you're 20 years old, and I feel like that is such a good insight for people to listen to and hear, that you can continue to work and believe in yourself, but also know that there is stuff to improve on.
Yes, always. It's just about being the best player, but best person you can be. And I think that when you also focus on being the best person you can be, it helps show that, it helps show the player that you are. I found that when I did more for family and community and all, when I felt better about myself, that helped me feel better, which helped me on the field. I need to, if my family's not happy, I struggle to perform. I need to make sure that they're happy first so I can perform. It's just, I don't know, it's kind of the way I am, I guess.
Yeah, it's maturity. It's maturity. It's a great thing that you want to impact the lives of others, not only yourself, your own career, but the people around you, the fans, you know, signing one extra autograph or taking one extra picture that makes someone's day, you know, that always comes back to you in a positive way. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, I love it. Always. People make me happy. So that's why I like to make people happy.
All right, that first camp that you went into with the national team, you said you were probably smiling the whole time. But when you got there and you were in the mix, what was the realization of all that hard work, and how did that feel to be in the group of a really a lot of newcomers to the team, but a core of young players in the men's national team during that first camp?
Well, besides the extreme nervousness, I was almost confused. I was like, okay. 1 year ago, not even 9 months ago, I was with the reserve team. in a second division team, barely getting my playing time. And 9 months later, here you are next to Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, name them all. Yeah. And, you know, I used to watch them on TV. You know, Christian, I used to watch on TV. Weston used to watch on TV, you know. And now you're there with them. You're speaking to them. They're asking you questions. You're like, oh, shoot, you know, this guy kind of wants to know about me. You know, I always want to know about him. So it's just shocking. You know, it's mind blowing. And it still is, even after the second camp, it still is, you know, to be able to share the field with future stars and current super players, you know, and it's inspiring. It's inspiring. You know, I first of all, I felt kind of out of the mix at first. I was a little nervous. I was like, okay, you know, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Just play your game. That's why, you know, Greg, the coach, didn't call you up for no reason. So, you know, just prove him right. And, you know, day after day, I got more and more comfortable. And after the game where I scored 2 goals, I said to myself, you know, you can do it. You can do it. You could have scored 3, the doubt, you missed the penalties, could have scored 3, you know, darn. But, you know, happy because you kind of did the unexpected, let's say, because I don't think, even I was surprised that I managed to score 2 goals. So, you know, after thinking about it all, it's just, you know, I guess I just say, you know, it's part of life. You go on, you learn, you trust yourself. Sometimes you don't. And at the end of the day, you know, things happen and you learn from them and you have fun. Just have fun, basically, you know, have fun.
Well, since you dropped it on us, you scored a brace on your second appearance. Okay. Mm-hmm. I remember watching and saying, who is this kid? Who is this kid coming in, rocking the 9, scoring a brace in his second game? Okay, I like that.
No foul there as McKennie wins it back. Reyna Ulianez on the deck. Rebound is a goal. Joaquini there, alert on the scene as Mosquera spilled it.
Joaquini, number 9, getting an opportunity, gets his first goal in a U.S. shirt.
Adams, the reverse pass. McKennie, can he get there? Yes, clipping it up. Header back in front. Joaquini scores. Threw his body at it there. As Miazga kept it in play.
And what do you want from a number 9? You want a guy that's hungry in the box, that finds those spots, reacts first here, just throws his body on the line, gets on the end of that one, and nods it home.
And you know, I hyped you up on Instagram. I said, okay, this is youth. This is what we want. Energy, especially in that forward position. You know, it's not like we've had a number of strikers coming in year after year, or cycle after cycle, who are producing. Right? Not only for your country, but for your club. It's a position that we need more attackers. We need more depth. We need people who are playing 90-minute matches and scoring 15 to 25 goals a year. We need that. And so here you are, you come in and you make a statement. I'm here. I'm ready to go. What were those conversations like in the locker room after? What did, you know, Greg Berhalter say? And how much pride did you have, you know, taking off that kit at the end of the game, knowing that you proved to everybody that you have the talent to be, you know, one of these strikers that goes on to have a long, successful career with the U.S. Men's National Team. Like, this is the start.
Yeah. You know, as I always say, I had that doubt saying, don't get over yourself. You did it once. Now the harder part is to do it again and again and again and again. And, you know, at first I was extremely happy, but that doubt is, I think, what keeps me, let's say, calm. After each goal I scored, I didn't really celebrate because, first of all, the game wasn't over. And second of all, relax, Nico, there's more. And after the game, it's the same thing. You know, there's just, you got to do more. Once, you know, if you do it once and just once, you know, people can consider that a flop. And I'll consider it a flop myself if I only do good once. So, you know, let's come back in in 15 years have this conversation, this podcast again.
Okay.
And then I'll be like, yeah, I did this and I did that. You know, it'll be different. But it's still, for me, it's still too early. I've probably proven to people that I can be with this group, but I haven't proven that I deserve that number 9 spot as yet.
Okay, I've got 2 things for you. One, I'm going to talk to both of you guys in a second because you're both number 9s and I want to get a little perspective here. But 2, one of the things that really intrigued me is after that, at the game where you scored a brace and you mentioned you missed a penalty kick. And for a lot of players, and for you, you told us, darn, right? Darn, I wish I would have made it. But after the match, you said, it's an opportunity to grow. And I think that is such a interesting way to think about it, because a lot of players would be so disappointed in that, what it looks like a failure, right? But you can turn that into a success going forward. Again, it's such a cool way to think about things. And I think just by saying that, you're inspiring a lot of young players who might not take a risk and step up and take that penalty. But how did you wrap your brain around that miss afterwards and use it to help you going forward? Or how have you used that so far?
Well, I basically told myself that you missed it. That sucks. Of course, you know, on the moment it's disappointing, but that just means you got to practice it. You know, at the end of the day, it's just, you got to work harder on that. It just
have you been practicing it?
I have. Okay. And yep, the next time, I'm not going to start going to score because I don't want to jinx myself. The next time will be better.
Okay, so. We like it. So the second thing, I want to talk to both of you guys because I feel a little left out. I don't have a 9 jersey or a painting behind me. I've got a mirror and an Airbnb and I look like a loser. But you guys are winners. You got some cool memorabilia behind you. Charlie's got his, I don't know what kit that is, Charlie. Signed by everybody.
Yeah, the Confederations Cup.
Meaningful, really meaningful memory for you. But Nico, you have to show us and talk to us about what you have behind you because there's a pretty cool painting behind you that means a lot to you.
Yeah, go ahead, show. Give a plug. Plug to the artist.
Hold on, let me turn the light on. I don't know if you guys see it well, but it's kind of... I mean, it was just the photo that she captured. I mean, when I saw it, I was speechless. And, you know, just that moment of, you know, I was happy. I was excited, but, you know, I still had that doubt. Like, you know, you scored 2. This was the second one, the one I threw myself at the ball. But, you know, it's just, I'm just speechless. It's hard to describe, I guess, the emotion on the moment. You know, it's something, it's a memory, which I will have hopefully as long as I'm here and it'll go wherever I go. So that's for sure.
Yeah. It's an incredible painting.
Yeah. And so the second question is for Charlie, and you've worn that number 9 and you've worn it in big games and you've worn it with pride. How cool is it for you to see Nico wear that number and have the really debut like he did? We're going to call it a debut, his second game, but we're going to still call it a debut. Just what he's carrying on that legend of that 9 kit.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, anybody that touches the U.S. men's national team, you're part of this brotherhood for the rest of your life. And you're a fan. Once you're in and out of the program, you're a fan. You're not only a fan of your country, but you put blood, sweat, and tears into making that dream come true. And it was a reality. And now on the back end, you know, on this side of things, I watch the U.S. men's national team. And I'm like, I want the most for them. And I want whoever wears the 9 to go out there and do his thing and score goals and excite people. And, you know, when I see Nico rocking the jersey, scoring a brace on his second cap, that's what it's about. Seeing the next generation take their opportunities and move forward. And I want the most for you. I want to wish you the best of success. I want you to continue to carry on the legacy of the 9, right? I think number nine stands for a lot of things, you know, goals and celebrations and bringing people together and doing well, leading, because you're leading the line, you're the top striker. I think there's a lot that goes into leading in the locker room, but leading also off the field. And you touched on it, making people feel good. The people who pay money to support you, to support the country, take an extra photo, sign an extra autograph. Is it that difficult? No, but you're changing the lives of so many others because they're going to remember that moment for the rest of their lives. They're going to cherish that ball or that jersey. And you know you have the power to literally change the outlook on someone's life for that day, for that moment, for the rest of their lives. And I love the fact that you're 20 years old and you know that now. And you also know that don't celebrate for a brace against Panama. Like that, it's great and it's fantastic, but celebrate a brace in a World Cup semifinal against an Italy, against a Holland, against a Germany, against a Brazil, against a Spain, against an Argentina, where you're getting the country to a first World Cup final. Then celebrate. Then, okay, we will all get down and say that's what it's about. But you know you're not even close to your potential to where you can be as a player. And I love the fact that you're coming into it with that kind of that open mind, the humbleness, and that work ethic. So that's what excites me.
Well, thank you. I got a big pair of shoes to fill. I mean, that's it. That's basically it. You said it all. That number nine, as you wore it, it's an honor to wear it. And hopefully I will be able to wear it in the future and in upcoming competitions and earn my way to keep it. And make people smile, make people happy. That's the goal. That's the goal.
How excited were you when you're playing against Jamaica in this March camp, where you're obviously your mother's from, the Reggae Boys, and you record an assist on Sebastian Legette's first goal? How special was that? You know, I'm sure you had some conversation with your mom being like, I'm sorry, but I had to do it.
My mom was happy for me. She was like, hey, kill him, you know. You know, do what you got to do. It was great. You know, I was extremely happy for him. I see what a hard worker he is, what a good person he is. Sebastian is a super guy, always chill, always relaxed, always smiling. And, you know, it's a pleasure to you know, get an assist, pleasure to serve people so they can get their scoring moments. You know, it's almost even a better feeling than their own goal, you know, but hopefully I will be able to do the same thing in a big competition. And then we'll be able to celebrate a little more than we did.
All right. Last thing with the men's national team, tell us about this group. It's a lot of young guys. You guys are kind of all in this same age, a lot playing in Europe. Bring us in as much as you can to what happens in camp, what the group is like, who's the jokester, and really what you guys talk about as your aspirations for who this group can become.
Yeah, a lot of young guys, and every single one of them are cool, relaxed, cool, you know, just what goes the flow. No one seems to be big-headed, you know, big ego. Everyone seems to be pretty down to earth, which was nice to see because it makes everything so much easier conversing and even on the pitch it makes it so much easier. And you can tell that everyone's trying to learn from everyone else. Everyone's listening. And when I say everyone, I mean everyone is listening, whether it's the coach, whether it's the other players, the older players, the younger players, everyone is trying to learn to get better. And that's just the environment we all need. And I need to know that everyone around me is trying to get better, which inspires, you know. We have all kinds of, you know, different type of guys. We have the jokesters. Weston wasn't here the last camp in March, but that guy is just too funny. I guess as the jokesters, you know, I can connect with some of the boys, they just, some of them, I can go to all of them at the end of the day because everyone's so open, you know. I know probably Tim Weah a little more than the rest because we're in France, both of us.
Do you speak French with him or English?
English. We awesome. French. We'll keep French to speak into French people. When between American and
English.
Yeah. That, you know, keeping in touch with them even after camp, you know, with, you know, I connected a little more to Serginho once he nutmegged me, but, you know, that's all right. That's cool.
Hey, you know, I had your back on Instagram, right? I said, hey, you're not a defender. You are not. Best of us. Yeah. You get megged. Good thing you're leading the line. Cause if you get megged, guess what? You have 10 others behind you. So you're good.
Let's hope.
Okay. Yeah. Let's hope.
Well, afterwards, that's why they cut the video. So that's, I was like, all right, cool. You got the nutmeg, but you lost the ball afterwards. But yeah, it was fun. It was cool. You know, getting back to the guys, it's just even getting to speak to Christian, you know, it's just different. It's almost a dream come true. It is a dream come true. And especially when the guys are so open-minded, it just puts a smile on your face. That's for sure. You know, I connected with Eunice, even more, you know, Eunice, Anthony, it's just a group of happy kids, happy boys. And it's just a pleasure to you know, share the field with them.
All right.
Are you hot in France? Like, is it still, it's still plenty of sun over there right now?
Yeah. Looks toasty though.
If you'd like to see.
Yeah. Give me that weather shot.
Yeah, not really.
Oh, not, yeah. Well, I remember those days.
We'll bring the heat. How about that, Charlie?
Yeah, let's bring the heat. It's time for the hot seat. Welcome to the hot seat. Nico, I don't know if you're ready for this, but it's rapid fire. We're just firing questions. Answer as quick as you can, and we move on. Bop, bop, bop. So you grew up in St. Louis in the 2000s. I mean, Kansas City, Missouri.
You grew up in Kansas City.
Kansas City, Missouri. It's St. Louis and Kansas City. I know they're not the same, but it's Missouri. Okay. Nelly in the 2000s. You have to be a big Nelly fan growing up in that kind of era. Favorite song?
Nope.
No. Oh,
we're off to a good start. Oh, I think he's too young for Nelly. I think he's too young for Nelly, and I hate to say that, but I think he is.
I didn't get into music until I got to, until I got to France.
Oh.
Before, I didn't really listen to music. Maybe like once in a while, like Eminem.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, let's rewind the tape. Rewind. We're gonna start again.
Yeah. Oh, God. Welcome to the hot seat.
Just ask it with...
All right. you can pick only one for the rest of your life. Italian food, French food, or Jamaican food?
Italian food.
Oh.
Yeah.
What exact thing?
Gnocchi.
Oh, it's my favorite, too.
Well, yeah, so gnocchi, any sauce, you know, there's gorgonzola, which is the cheese sauce. There's gnocchi, pesto, just gnocchi are too good. Yeah, gnocchi. Gnocchi.
Okay, that's your favorite Italian food. What's your favorite Jamaican food?
I don't want to say jerk chicken, that's kind of cliche. You know, everyone's kind of saying that. But
that would be mine.
It's good, though. It's really good.
Rice and peas and some jerk chicken. Count me in.
Yeah, that's that stuff's too good. Yeah, I gotta stay away from that stuff. That's dangerous.
Favorite? All right, no. What do you miss most about the United States?
The mentality. I think that besides the home part, just mentality. In the US, things went so much more quickly. People are more straightforward about things than here. I feel like here, especially when you're not French, you kind of get lost, you know, people don't really think about what you're saying anymore, and you kind of just get lost in the wind, you know. In America, in the US, everything felt so much quicker and straightforward. You needed something, you did this, you got it, you know, just that on top of everything mentality, you know, nothing is impossible. And I feel like here it misses that, that grind to get things done. And I miss that mentality extremely so.
I'm still on food. So I'm going back to you're passing by the local bakery in your hometown here in France. What are you getting from the bakery? Like, what's your go-to?
That's a horrible question.
Why? Because you want it all, or?
Everything is just too good in so the bakery. Good.
Like beignets, croissant.
Yeah, I just say croissants, just to keep it simple.
Yeah.
You know, give them 1 year, like 70 cents. You get a croissant and you end up spending like $7 on croissants. That stuff is too good. Croissants, even the macaroons. I don't know if you guys know macaroons.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. So those good. Are delicious.
La Durée.
Yep, exactly.
Best goal celebration you've had?
I think sliding on my knees and doing the salute.
Ooh. I like that
one. It's a good combo.
It's a classic one with a little twist to it.
Yeah. Your favorite player of all time?
Zlatan.
Are you a singer or a dancer?
Singer. No, don't singer. Ask me.
What's your favorite song to sing, and can we get a little preview?
Yeah. Hit us with the chorus.
Probably Butterfly Effect.
Who sings that?
Travis Scott, probably.
You don't have to sing for us also. Yeah. That was just...
I thought you were going to hit me with some R&B type.
I do, but I don't really... Sometimes I don't really remember the lyrics.
Gotcha.
I just... These because... I know this song because it's like one of the only songs I know the lyrics to.
Love it. If you could travel... Oh, are you still going? Are you going to sing for us? Sorry.
You want a little like 10 seconds?
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. For this life I cannot change. Hidden hills, peep off in the main. M&M's, sweet like candy cane. Drop the top, pop it, let it rain. All right, and on and on.
All right.
Okay.
It's kind of like I don't know Travis Scott that well. It's kind of like a rap, right?
Yeah.
He's a rapper? Okay.
Yeah.
But he kind of flows in a way that it sounds like singing at moments, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think what he's...
Really in
like trying I'm to
really
be like
in with the cool kids.
Yeah, like a little bit like Drake, kind of like the singing with the rapping.
Okay. If you could go to one, if you could travel one place that you've never been before, where would you go?
Maldives, probably.
That's my number one.
Yeah. I think or like Hawaii or something, but something tropical. Yeah, I'd say Maldives. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Don't follow the Four Seasons Maldives on Instagram, whatever you do, because it really is a tease.
Really?
Yeah, don't do it. I am currently doing it. I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah,
you want to go every day.
I've done that too. I've gone down that rabbit hole. Nico, you crushed it. Thank you for spending time with us. I think everyone got a good sense of who you are, your character, and what you're trying to achieve in the future. So, you know, you got two fans here on this podcast. Thanks for joining us. I know we're going to have you on again after you've scored some goals for the red, white, and blue. But thank you again. That was awesome.
Thank you, guys. It was real, real pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
Jordy, I don't know about you, but I am left amazed by our conversation with Nico Gioacchini. What were some of your takeaways?
I'm just really intrigued by his mindset at such a young age that he is able to carry those highs and lows and really stay steady, or what it seems like steady, and kind of how he's built himself to be that way over the years. But I really liked Charlie. I liked just you and him having that connection, his reaction to what you said to him. And you really can tell that he is so honored to play for the men's national team and to represent his country. And I think really in the end, that's what it's all about, is that pride and representing what the country is all about and getting to do that on a world stage.
And I love the fact that he's getting that crash course education in Ligue 2 in France, yeah, where it is kick and fight and claw and kind of exactly what you're going to get in World Cup qualifying. It's you do whatever is necessary to win the game. And to get that at such an early age, I think is going to benefit him in the long run and benefit his U.S. national team career in the long run. So I'm excited. He's a great kid. He obviously gets it. It's not
He's
about
so
yourself,
nice.
Right? It's about like making other people happy when the fans come to support you. How can you inspire them in signing that extra ball or signing that extra jersey or taking an extra picture? And it was an honor to have him on the podcast.
Yeah. I mean, we'll send him some Nelly songs.
Yeah, we'll get him some.
That was maybe one of my favorite parts of our hot seat ever is the rewind.
Just don't assume because you're from Missouri and you're from
Nelly.
You were born in the early 2000s that you like Nelly, because I assumed that you did.
And, oh my gosh, so funny. The cool thing about all this, Charlie, is we just talked to Nico and his team is playing and this weekend against Grenoble, and you can watch it here in the U.S. Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern on BN Sports Connect. So if you want to, go check it out, see if you can get that channel and go watch Nico play.
All right, let's get into some current U.S. Women's National Team news. The U.S. Women's National Team kicks off its European tour on Saturday, playing against Sweden. You can catch the game at 1 p.m. Eastern on Fox. And then on Tuesday, April 13th, they'll take on France in France at 3 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Sweden is ranked number 5 in the world. We know the U.S. Women's Team is familiar with that squad. And France is number 3. And of course, handed the USA its last loss all the way back in January of 2019 at the same venue they'll be playing at this time in Le Havre.
Wow, that's a long time ago. And not only that is something to look forward to, but these two great games could give you an opportunity to witness history, Charlie. Carly Lloyd enters the weekend with 299 caps.
Oh my gosh.
Just one away from becoming the third player in international soccer history, male or female, to represent their country 300 times. Can you even fathom that?
Salute to Carly Lloyd.
Right? She's already had an incredible career, 2 World Cup titles. She put on a show in one of those World Cup finals, as we all know, back in Canada, 2 Olympic golds, 2-time FIFA World Player of the Year, and now the chance to join Christine Lilly and Christy Pierce Rampone in the 300 club.
I mean, I really can't even fathom playing 300 games for your country. It's an incredible achievement.
I know.
Like a standing O for a year. I'll give Carly Lloyd a standing ovation for a year. Straight. It's just incredible. Okay. Well done.
Yeah, we're going to hear all the claps from across the country when she makes that 300th appearance here in the next few days, hopefully. So, Charlie, this was a fun episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you guys giving us a little bit of your time. And, Charlie, until next week, that's it for us. Have a good day.
See you later. Love. 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 In love. In love. Love. It's love. Yes, love.